Welcome to another episode of Pop Culture Essentials. I'm your host for today, Nick Labarro from Nick's Flix Fix, standing in for Alistair, who's unfortunately got a power outage in Melbourne at the moment. But without Alistair here, without the boss man reining us all in, I've got a bit of a motley crew together to talk about all things Marvel, Shang-Chi, and Eternals, which finally hit cinemas after some delays. But before we get into our Marvel films for the week, I'm going to introduce our two fantastic guests on the show today. John Cooper, how are you going, mate?
Yeah, pretty good.
That's good, man. And Aziz Abbas, how are you, man?
Yeah, good, man, for the weekend. Yeah.
It is. I know how good. It's the end of the weekend, though. I don't want to bring a downer on it all. But we're finishing the weekend on a strong point. So, John, talk to us a little bit about what you do, man. Your movie reviews and what you've done with Nova Stream.
I do movie reviews on Instagram at John the Movie Dude, and I write some stuff for Nova Stream as well.
Nice. And Aziz, how about you? You've written a couple of things for Nova Stream over the last few years.
Yeah, more than a couple. Because I'd like to think that all the time that I spend writing and watching films are worth something.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, I've been on been really fortunate enough to be working with Nova Stream now for a couple of years. And just doing mainly the sort of blockbuster films and a few indies here and there. So it's been really a really good ride.
And you're in Sydney, if I recall correctly. And how's the cinema experience been for you since the escape, I guess we can call it? How was that going back to the cinema, that experience? What was that like for you?
Well, remember we had that, we've had lockdown now. But we didn't have lockdown when people in Melbourne had lockdown, for example. And so I remember thinking, I'm so lucky that I still get to go. And that was really great. And then suddenly we had lockdown and I'm like, oh gosh, here's Nick getting all the screenings. and for some reason, the American distributors don't like giving out screener links to people in Australia. Yeah, and I was feeling there was a lot of FOMO happening. And then it's opened up and I'm like, okay, this is a great experience now. It was almost surreal to be there. We still have to wear masks and stuff, but it's great to be back to some familiar popcorn smelling seats and, it's been lovely.
Oh, good. Good to hear. And I'm assuming one of the first films to come out upon the end of lockdown was Marvel's Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which is one of the films we'll be discussing today on the podcast. So we'll start with John. Man, when you first saw Shang-Chi, what was your first thoughts of the film? Did you enjoy it? Did you not enjoy it? What was your first thoughts?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, once the movie had ended, I was very excited for the future of the MCU, even more now. It was a different Marvel movie, really. Because this is like an unknown character within the standard Marvel fan base. And so to see this new martial art like movie on the big screen as it was just amazing, really.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's for me as well. Like it was a martial arts inspired Marvel film that really excited me about it. The action scenes are next level, especially for that first sort of two acts there. What about you, Aziz? What did you first think when you saw Shang-Chi?
So it's interesting because going in, obviously, like I am definitely an MCU fan, not diehard or anything, but I'm always so excited. And so I was really excited going in to watch this. And yes, as we just said, like it's something that we didn't know. I wasn't familiar with Shang-Chi. I wasn't familiar with the Ten Rings, etc. So I kind of had to sort of do a bit of research coming into it. But for better or worse, the trailers were sort of really brought me in and I was so excited. And look, I loved the cast and the thought of seeing Awkwafina was just like brilliant. Yeah. I love Simu Liu and I thought this is going to be great.
Yeah, for sure.
And certainly, like, going in, I thought, wow, I was, like, blown away. I loved the vibe that I got going in. It had that Black Panther alternative vibe. It's, like, celebrating this diversity. Just for me, as sort of a person of color, so to speak, you know, you've from this other, you know, background where, you know, it's just not all white American people. Like,
Absolutely. Yeah.
That part really resonated with me, which is why I like Black Panther. And I just love those themes. And I love the celebration of the cultural diversity. And then, yes, the action scenes, the martial art themes, all of those, they just really hit home for me. And I thought it was such a celebration. And it was something that I was just so excited walking out. I was like, oh, this was amazing.
Yeah, I think, and I think that's something that Marvel are definitely sort of honing their focus in on now, is showing this wide, it's, I can't even say world now, because it's almost galactic sort of level of diversity within the MCU, and in an incredible way that they're paying such respect and homage to the cultural aspects of it at all. And it's one thing to have, like you said, people of color in, and especially when we talk about Eternals, the diversity representation there. It's one thing just to have them on the screen, but to actually celebrate that culture as well is not just a step in the right direction, but it's interesting to see on screen. Like I said, it's not a story about big buff white American superheroes anymore. We got that for 10 years.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. That's right. It's on to something else.
Exactly. And
with a lot more depth as well.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I think that was the thing also that hit home for me. It's the depth here, you know, the characterization in that film was just phenomenal. Like, you really understood these people. You know, there was the backstory. It wasn't just, not that I'm saying that, well, look, not very few other MCU films, in my opinion, manage to get down into the details of someone's persona in one film. We've had, you know, Steve Rogers, like, we've gotten to know him over more than a decade. And so it's only then, and it's like arguably only in the last half of that decade that we kind of really started really understanding him, you know. And so, whereas here, we found out that, you know, who these people are from the get-go. And I just think that's just, and you know, and arguably they need to do that right for phase four. This is something that people are going to be completely, largely unfamiliar with.
Yeah.
And so it's really important for them to start to make these connections for the audience quickly to allow them to continue on this journey with the Marvel phase four. Mm.
I couldn't have said that any better myself. And you're totally right. We don't want to just go back to square one now. Now Avengers Endgame's happened. We need to quickly establish characters, but also do it in a way that's entertaining. And like you said, you can understand the characters. And I agree. I think did that incredibly well with Shang-Chi. John, did you have a favorite moment in the film, or is there anything that stands out to you that you loved the most about Shang-Chi?
I think one of my favorite moments would have been when they're running, like, down the scaffold, the bamboo scaffolding.
Oh yes.
I just got instant Rush Hour 2 vibes from it.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah,
it felt like not necessarily more as an homage, but just as a like little tease to reference more martial art films throughout it.
Yeah, for sure. That seems exciting. I love the bus scene. I think that just on a technical level looked incredible. It was exciting. It really established a lot of excitement early on for me. How about you, Aziz? Do you have a favorite moment from the film?
Yeah, I love the scaffolding scene, right? Like, that was just awesome. I think, and anything that sort of displayed that the martial arts sort of vibe, that for me, like, it was just, you know, sure, it was like Bruce Lee or whatever, you know, like, all, you know, it just brought in all of that, and I just loved that flavor that they were coming. I mean, even when they went through to the other world, like, it was that was beautiful as well. Like, it was just, it was lovely to see that world was, you know, there was still, like, there was, you know, that was quite, it seemed quite serene, and there was sort of a very sort of subsistence level, but like wanting of nothing. And I thought that that was, I liked that. I thought that that was a nice portrayal of a way a community can live together. You know, it was a lovely sort of scene for me as well.
Absolutely. And I think, well, we've all spoken about scenes that sort of happen a little earlier on in the film, but one of the criticisms, and one of the, in fairness, only criticisms Shang-Chi sort of garnered was that it sort of became a bit too, in quotes, Marvel-y by the end. And that final climactic battle scene that was, it seemed a little tonally, well, for me personally, it seemed a little tonally off from the first two acts of the film. Do you think that sticking to the Marvel formula so strongly just for that third act worked in its favor for that familiarity? Or would you like to see Marvel do some different things in the future, John?
Well, on my first watch, I found that it did feel like a little off from everything that has happened in the movie, but it still fit fairly well into a big finale act for this epic standalone film. Sure. But on my second rewatch, it definitely stood out as definitely like just something that placed in to try and cap it all off together.
Yeah.
And it definitely didn't connect to have this big open battle where it's like, again, it's the father and son pinning against each other for this big final act. And it
still sort of made it personal, personal story within there. Yeah, absolutely. Rather than just a big fight. Yeah.
It was different in that way. And that's what it was pretty like. That's why it felt right. But it still felt very like Marvel-y in that sense.
For overall. Sure. How about you, Aziz? Are you a fan of sticking with the Marvel formula, or would you like to see a few things change up in phase four?
That's an interesting question. Hey, I mean, who am I? Like, you know, who am I to say that? You know what I mean? We're all here at the end of, you know, on this cusp of phase four for a reason, right?
Yeah.
And it could well be because, you know, arguably could well be because, you know, up until now this formula's worked.
That's a good point, yeah.
Right? And so I don't know that there's a right answer to that because sure, this is what we're used to. Who's to say that that's right? Mm. Why does every film have to be so formulaic? What is there actually a formula? Like, is there a magic recipe? Is there one? Like, I don't know.
What's the herbs and spices for the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Yeah.
And you look at a few of the films of Phase Three, for example. You look at Ragnarok. You look at Guardians 2, for example, and you know, they've all just been a bit off, left of center, right?
Yeah,
and
for sure.
They were celebrated, and in large part, they were celebrated. Mm. And you know, it was something different. They hit the humor more. There was a bit more of a comic theme to them, and that all worked. And people thought that was refreshing, for the most part. I certainly liked that. And so, I don't know that it's necessary for every film going forward to be either sticking to, you know, what we're used to the entire way through. Every film deserves to have its own little signature, which is why, for example, like I thought, like, again, I keep on going back to Black Panther, it's one of my favorite ones, but that was slightly different as well. And, you know, and that all worked. And so in large part, I think Shang-Chi worked. That final scene that you talk about, it was a bit stretched. Yep. CGI was a bit, you know, how you're doing.
It was a lot of CGI.
A lot of CGI, right? It was very heavy. And I'm not going to hold it back on that point because I just think that it is what it is.
Yep.
And so, I don't necessarily think that there should be some... I think each film has to stand on its own merits. And it really... I think the important thing now, really, going forward is that remembering that the audience in large part is not familiar with these characters that are sort of coming up. And I think that it's really important to develop that connection and to try and keep us interested. I've got to say, I was apprehensive as well. Going into phase four, I was really apprehensive saying, okay, what's next? And I feel nervous about, you know, well, you know, where are we going with this? And am I going to be as interested? Am I going to be as connected to these characters to want to keep on going with this?
Yeah, absolutely. And well, I guess that's a good point to segue into the next, <Isn't it? laughs> the next film, which is Marvel's Eternals, which is just premiered worldwide this weekend gone to early on, very mixed critical reviews. It's garnered a lot of, I guess, infamy in being the lowest rated Marvel or the lowest rated MCU film on Rotten Tomatoes. It's currently holding around 50 or just low 50% score there. And then it opened up to the public, to audiences, and it's sitting in the mid 80s at the moment. It's, and you know, disconnects between critics and audiences is an age-old argument, but at the same time, in a sense, all three of us are in a way critics, we're reviewers, and it'd be interesting to see where we all sit on this. And I think I'll go first in saying that I really enjoyed Eternals. For me, it was so boldly different for anything I've seen in Marvel, while still managing to sprinkle in a few, I call them MCU-isms. In there, we had the humor, especially with Kumail Nanjiani as Kingo. He is hilarious. He
killed it.
He's so funny. And his, I can't remember the name of his offsider who's filming the documentary the whole time, but there was, I had an absolute blast with him. And for me, the action really worked. It was a bit more sporadic than what you would normally get in a Marvel film. But it still worked for me in a sense. But what was your initial thoughts, John, on Eternals?
It was a vastly different movie. As a fan of like all films in general as well, and Chloe Zhao specifically, and looking at her as an aspiring filmmaker myself, she's done something vastly different to the MCU that we've ever seen before, but it still stuck to the comic book like area of look of films that we've seen in the MCU. There's like large widescape moments where it feels like you're just reading a massive page out, straight out of a comic book, to the point that you just appreciate the cinematography in this film like a lot.
I think I won't speak for all of us, and we can all sort of bring it up, but when Chloe Zhao was initially announced as director, I was a little shocked. It was more so because I knew Marvel going for these, you know, up-and-coming independent directors. Obviously, we had Coogler with Black Panther, and then when Taika Waititi was on for Thor Ragnarok, it was guys who'd only done independent sort of films. And then even college, I was like, okay. And then I saw Nomadland. And I remember walking out of Nomadland going, I'm really excited for Eternals now. As a filmmaker, she's absolutely incredible visually, but also being able to capture the humanity in almost all things. But before we go a bit deeper, Aziz, what was your initial reaction to Eternals?
I'm so looking forward to this discussion because I know how you feel about it. And Alistair as well. And I'm thinking, okay. All right, look, I don't see my, it's just so interesting because I'm going to call it a tug of war between my, my love of all things Marvel and then my love of film and film criticism and huge respect for Chloe Zhao, right? And I was super apprehensive, I've got to say, when I found out that Chloe Zhao was doing this, because I thought, okay, she's not really, she's got a very, well, in my view, she's got a very particular style. And you know, not just like with Nomadland, for example, like, but all of that sort of that scenery, scenescape, and for me, the thing that resonates with me with Chloe is her ability to have very little in the script, and yet, and it's all about imagery, and it's so much about the acting and what you're not actually hearing. It's about the context. It's about where they are in that moment. And it's the ability to connect on that deeper level. And I'm thinking that is so non-superhero film-like. That is so non-Marvel-like. So I was really apprehensive about that going in. And I thought, hang on, okay. And I'm just going to go in with a, you know, objective mind as much as possible and just see what she has to deliver and expecting great things in terms of absolutely the cinematography, et cetera, right? And so then I've got to say that, look, I'm a bit disappointed by it because she had her work cut out for her. She's got cast of thousands. She's got a cast of thousands to introduce.
That's the most mental part, right? Isn't it?
and the way I was talking about with Shang-Chi, like how each character, like there was only like really three main characters sort of really sort of develop and connect with through the entirety of the film to understand this, right, and to appreciate who they are. Here she had like, you know, seven of them, and which obviously explains the length. But then again, with the script, to me, Chloe Zhao is a wonderful director. I don't necessarily would think of her as being someone who would contribute to script writing, and yet here she is. And
I
really thought that the script was quite, I thought it could have been better with the script. Mm. And what I found, I still don't even remember everyone's name. Like, I don't remember, I don't know the name of it, all the characters. Some of the, you know, the back and forth to try and understand everybody's backstory was like a super quick and easy way to introduce them, and I get that, you know, there's a reason why she did that, but again, it's she didn't have to then rely on the script, right, to understand, you know.
No,
she
exactly,
could just shoot back to history and we can find out what it watch and see what they were doing back then to what to explain where they are now, and again, we don't have to rely on the script so much. Kumail was great as a comic relief every time, but I'm sorry, I don't think that when it came to, again, his regular script or when he was talking serious, I thought it was cringeworthy. When the comic relief would happen, it was funny, it was hilarious. I actually did laugh quite a few times, and that was wonderful. But so much of it as well, I was thinking, oh, really? I was kind of disappointed in some of the performances of the people. And look, visually, it was beautiful. Like, it was a beautiful film visually, and that signature Chloe style, and, you know, it was wonderful.
Forefront, yeah, that's right? Definitely there, yeah.
Absolutely. Seeing Summer Hayek, I don't think it's any coincidence that she's out in Montana, you know, when you've got with someone like Chloe Zhao filming, like, she wants to take advantage of those open spaces, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was lovely. But yeah, I was a bit disappointed with some of that, to be honest.
You bring up a real good point as well with having to introduce a literal smorgasbord of characters in one film, and let alone characters who have and look like will be having a significant impact on the MCU going forward, considering they have been on Earth for 7,000 years. You know, it's a monumental task to try. And the movie definitely, for me, focuses on certain characters. And I think Gemma Chan as Cersei, where the film sort of focuses on the most her story, I think they balance her story a little unevenly, considering she's supposed to be the one going on the hero's journey. My main issues with the film are the structure and the pacing. I think, like you said, going back in time in history just to then sort of build up characters again. We see it in I called it the Rick and Morty heist episode sort of montage, when they're going and collecting all the Eternals and everyone's just like, yeah, I'm in. Like, you know what I mean? I'm in. And that's sort of how it felt at points. And then we would get a flashback scene. To sort of give us more about them. But
I think that's a good point, because the Gemma Chan angle was something that she's stunning. She has such great, she steals the screen, right? Like, she, amazing, you can't take your eyes off her at all. Like, she's there, she's got this great, unbelievable presence.
Yes,
and but at the same time, I struggled with her being the sort of the main hero in this, in her fighting ability. Like, she had this, she, you know, it's not, it wasn't, it almost had nothing to do with strength, right? You know, like I was worried time. I was worried every single time she was trying to she became involved in a battle against
the deviants.
The deviant, right? Like I was thinking, oh my gosh, like, you know, she has to touch the deviant to turn it into something else or something like that. You know, like where's
So there's genuine threat there as well. And that's
absolutely sort of, I was really feeling it. And but yeah, again, she didn't talk much.
Yeah.
And when she didn't talk much, I struggled to resonate with her and to follow her on this sort of, you know, so many of these themes that Chloe brought in, it's these existential questions and these sort of, it's really layered. And it's like, they're very deep sort of feelings that maybe a lot of the, you know, a lot of the comic book universe don't really deal with. And so to bring that to the screen was always going to be a difficult task. And not everyone goes to a sort of a cinema to see a blockbuster, you know, superhero movie and have to go through these sort of emotional questions, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I think definitely with Gemma Chan as well, there, her hero's journey thing sort of starts and then slows down a lot. And then for the third act, she gets her sort of revelatory moment. And that's where the pacing issues come into play. But was there a character for you, John, that sort of stuck out a little bit more, even just a performance that stuck out that you either enjoyed or one that maybe didn't work for you as well?
Not really. I mean, I guess I kind of was looking forward to seeing Richard Madden because he seemed like a pretty interesting character to see on screen.
Yeah.
Yes, as Icarus. Yes.
As Icarus. And I mean, I liked a lot of what they did with all the other characters. And I think I just enjoyed watching this ensemble of actors just portray the Eternals as a group, like at different points of the movie. And I think because we were focusing so much on them as a group and them going through this journey, it was hard to really find a protagonist and follow Gemma Chan's sort of hero story because they're all together like almost all the time.
For sure.
And so we only got moments of it.
Yeah. And while we're speaking about the characters and the Eternals as a whole and bringing back what we were talking about with the diversity in the MCU with Shang-Chi, the Eternals is an excellent example of diversity done well, I believe, as well, because we have the first gay couple in the MCU. We have our first deaf superhero in the MCU. And I know people are, this is not really a diversity thing, but I know people are, conservatives maybe are up in arms about the first sex scene in the MCU, which I saw an interesting tweet about this, and I'm Des out, so we'll probably cut this out. I saw a tweet about this that it was not in fact the first sex scene in the MCU, that Iron Man 1, he sleeps with the reporter. So I don't know why everyone's up in arms.
I think this is the first sex scene that we've actually ever seen straight up, and it made it very uncomfortable for a lot of people. I mean, I personally thought that with the following themes before it, it kind of worked slightly better than a passionate lovemaking scene.
Yeah, it didn't have to be gratuitous because Marvel is still a family-esque sort of franchise. I'm not looking for Marvel up late or anything like that, but it just, I guess, we see a lot of movies. We see a lot of things in movies. When I heard the buzz about it being first sex scene and then saw that, I was like, oh, okay, but that's neither here nor there. Diversity in the MCU. And I really think that this is a step in the right direction, which is, I say it all the time, it's rich coming from me as a white dude who's like, yes, we need more diversity in the MCU. It's like, it should just be a normal thing. And it's unfortunate that for the hundreds of years, well, the hundred and so years we've had filmmaking, it's taken this long for society to catch up to it, but it's nice to see that we are finally taking the right steps and normalizing what should have been normal years
ago. Yeah, I liked very much that it wasn't it was a very natural flow in terms of the introduction of these characters. The fact that they are not white, for example, it wasn't sort of focused on. And that's exactly the way it should be. I mean, I've got to say, I also really looked forward to seeing Richard Madden as Icarus, and so seeing that again, as much as I was looking forward to seeing what who Icarus is,
yep.
I feel like I didn't get at the end of the film. I didn't feel like I knew anything much more about Icarus. I right, still don't yep. understand. Is he evil? Is he good? I'm not sure. Right. Yep. That to me, I've walked out of it feeling frustrated, thinking I actually, and this is kind of what I have. This is this issue that I have with the characterization flaws in this film is that right. I've walked out of this film still not knowing all their names. I've walked out of their film still not exactly understanding who these people are. Right. Yeah. And you contrast that with Shang-Chi. I know who that guy is. I know who, you know, I know who the Black Panther is. You know, like yeah. I yeah. haven't come out of that, not come out of this knowing who these people are to feel satisfied enough, appreciating that it's just the start. Mm. But in order to get me back for Eternals 2,
yes,
am I connected enough? Am I, you know, am I engaged enough? And I don't know that I am. I mean, of course I will go right. see it.
Yeah, but, yes. I know what you mean. Would your excitement be the same it was before going into, say, something like Shang-Chi or something like that? It would be a little bit more strained now, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Thena, Angelina Jolie, I've got to say, I thought her performance was quite flat. And I don't, again, she's meant to be like the elite warrior, you know. Well, I kind of didn't see that. Really,
yeah.
You know, I didn't really see that at all. Kumail Kingo, look, I don't want to give a spoiler, and I don't want to do. Are we doing spoilers? I'm not doing. I don't know that we are. But
give a spoiler, and then if it gets cut out, it gets cut out. But yeah, for the conversation we're having, I'm enjoying it. Yeah, we'll keep going.
I mean, okay. Well, you know, so if we think of the final battle,
yes,
the big battle, and we see everyone who comes back, right? Mm. Well, where was Kingo? He wasn't there, right?
That's a good point. Why
did I didn't even think about this.
He's off. He said, sorry, guys, I'm not going to be a part of this. I don't, you know, and I'll see you later. And he disappears. Yeah. Everyone else comes back. Icarus comes back.
We didn't see him at the end of the film.
Sprite comes back and we don't see him. It's almost like, well, you know, why did he not come back? If he was meant to be an eternal, if he's meant to be, why, where was his?
Where was he at? Yeah.
I feel like that should have been pointed out to us at least in the movie. Like I can see where they can go with that sort of, he's gone now and bring him back later on, but he's kind of just disappeared and they didn't even mention it.
Yeah.
So, oh my God, you know, again, I haven't even thought about this till now.
That was problematic for me. And I just thought that was like, it almost like, I was talking to somebody else about it. I was like, what, did he have like a conflicting schedule or a filming schedule or something?
Oh, man.
He disappears.
Bold move, Kumail.
You know, and then another example with Makari, the hearing impaired, you know, the deaf,
yes,
a superhero there. I was really intrigued by her and I wanted to find out more about her. And again, like where was she? Didn't give her backstory at all.
No.
And yet others did. Others were given it. Sprite. I thought Sprite was very interesting, but she was a bit irritating. You know,
towards the end, I definitely
towards the end, like Sprite, you know, yeah. going off with Icarus. I'm like, okay, well, you know, yeah. So mixed thoughts there.
It was sort of shaky foundations, I guess, that were trying to keep the story on. Well, I guess which brings us to the last question about Eternals, and you sort of touched on your feelings about it a little bit, Aziz, so I might get you to close out with this. Would you, with Eternals 2, what would you hope to see, I guess, with characters returning? Do you want a bit more of their backstory, or do you want to keep pushing the MCU forward? What would you like to see potentially out of an Eternals 2?
I think it's good to see
these characters just returning in general, whether it's an Eternals 2 or not.
Yeah. Look, I think, I will always, it's Marvel. So I will always be invested.
Yeah.
Right. In the Marvel journey. So I'm here no matter what. Right. Yeah. And so, yes, I'll be there. What do I want to see? Yeah, I'd like to see some more character development. Yeah. We don't have to go back and forth constantly, but, you know, I'd love to see a bit more depth. I'd love to see a lot more screenplay action to just sort of understand, like to get a real sort of resonance with these individuals,
yeah,
their personalities, sure. To see where they're coming from. I mean, if they're these immortal people who've been living for all this time, they're going to be some complex personalities there, right?
Yeah, you absolutely.
I really want to see that come through. In whatever form that will be. Yes, we want to see some great action sequences, etc., and just see what these people can really do.
Yeah.
But give each character the credibility they deserve for being on this planet for thousands of years to sort of let them have their moment. Bring it on, you know.
I'd say have their moment in the sun, but that might be too on the nose for one of the characters. John, an Eternals 2 or the Eternals characters returning, what would you like to see? Would you be excited to see them again on screen?
I mean, I would like to see them progress further. Yeah. What this movie did was kind of ease you into the baseline of what they were. And with that, when you have such a big group, you kind of don't get enough of everyone. And so similar to what Aziz said, to progress the characters and like fill their stories a bit more, so we have like a attachment to them, because you've got,
sure.
I enjoy seeing the diversity there, and that's something that I look forward to seeing more. But to get a better attachment towards them, I think that would make them a much more greater character when brought into the MCU.
For sure.
Throughout the like film story overall, I'm excited to see them back either way, because I think it's definitely going to change what we've seen in the MCU before with this whole cosmic sort of style.
Yeah, absolutely. And cosmic, galactic, interdimensional, we're going big by the sounds of it for the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
You thought Infinity War was the beginning or the end.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, that was
it's certainly not, if you think about some of the mid and the end credit scene, right? So
right, yeah, wow,
yeah,
jeez, I like that they just confirmed. Well, I saw Chloe Zhao confirmed who the voice was in the second end credit scene. I was like, okay, that's cool. Oh,
I had so cool.
Give me.
I had two people,
yeah,
and it was Blade and the Watcher, and I'm glad it was Blade.
Ooh, okay. I'm so out of touch with everything Marvel outside of the MCU. So I in the cinema, I turned to my partner. I was like, that sounded like Willem Dafoe, but it was not. So
I thought it was the Watcher too. I thought that's Kang, but then no, yeah, obviously it was the Blade. So it's gonna be very interesting. And of course, you know, the big spoiler that everybody knew about with Harry Styles. So
I managed to keep away from that. That helped me in the cinema.
I saw one tiny thing and I was just like, yeah, sure.
I'm just not on Twitter enough, apparently. I missed it. But so when he came on, I was like, oh, well, at least he's, you know, one for one with movies. He was all right in Dunkirk, so I'll let him join the MCU.
I think he might work in the MCU.
I hope so. I hope he does. I think
he would too. It was a great, I was going to say, the person that I went to, the screening with, they said of the entire film, that scene was their favorite one. So. And it was great, right?
It was great. A brilliant scene. It was so funny. It was great.
They had Patton Oswalt as Pip
right, yeah.
And that just had me excited, because Patton Oswalt like got a great voice for a lot of characters.
He does.
I love Patton Oswalt. Well, that was Shang-Chi and Eternals for this week's Popcorn Culture Essentials. As we wrap up today's episode, we will talk about our pop culture essential for the week, something that we love that we want to bring out to the people of the world to check out. I'll go first. I've got a podcast I've been listening to. That's not Pop Culture Essentials. I know, treason. It's awful. But I do listen to other podcasts outside of this one. And it's called Films to be Buried With by Brett Goldstein. Brett Goldstein is Roy Kent in Ted Lasso. And you may be, you know, you might not only know him as Roy Kent, but outside of that, he's actually a really soft-spoken, lovely, hilarious comedian who brings on celebrities, actors, directors, writers. He actually had Chloe Chow's partner, Barry Jenkins, on an episode recently. And he talks about in the podcast, they have died and they go to a film heaven. And it's 10 films they would bring to them based under certain categories, like what is the film that's most meaningful to you? What film have you cried at, et cetera, et cetera. And it's fantastic. I've got a list even bigger than normal now of movies that I have to watch based on this show. And I've absolutely loved every episode of it so far. John, what is your pop culture essential for the week?
My pop culture essential is the new Chucky TV series.
Nice.
It's just continuing on from the Chucky storyline after Cult of Chucky, and it's modern and it's fresh.
Yeah.
And it's violent as well, and so it's just a lot of fun.
That's Don Mancini is,
yeah,
created it as well, who's from like the original Chucky creator as well.
Yeah, and the original voice of Chucky, I think, as well.
Oh, Brad Dourif, yeah.
Yeah.
That's rad. And that's on Nine now here in Australia.
Hey, it's on Nine now, and I think you can purchase it on Google Play and Apple TV as well.
Easy. Perfect. And Aziz, wrapping us up for the week, what is your pop culture essential for this week?
I've been reading Everything to Do with the Turtles to understand this new part of the universe that I am absolutely completely unfamiliar with. So I've been reading a lot of articles from Screen Crush. Looking at watching their YouTube clips and reading their articles about, you know, all the Easter eggs and all the little fascinating points to learn about each of the character and understanding all of their place in the Marvel universe. So Screen Crush has been my go-to for the week.
Amazing. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on this week's episode of Pop Culture Essentials. I've had a blast talking all things MCU. John, where can we find you on the internet or your Instagram handles or website, anything like that?
You can find me posting reviews on Instagram at John the Movie Dude. And yeah.
Awesome. And Aziz, where can we find you?
Well, all my articles are currently on NovaStream, and my Twitter handle is at AZZ33Z. So that's me at Twitter.
Awesome. And you can find myself on Instagram at NextFlixFix, and like Aziz, writing stuff on at NovaStreamNetwork.com. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you subscribe where you can subscribe and follow where you can follow. Rate us 5 stars as well, because we can help you. And also because the show is that good of quality. But thank you again for listening. Join us next time on Pop Culture Essentials.